Welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Youth Ambassador Pinwheel Education Session on Eating Disorders and Relapse. This is a special edition of the Pinwheel in honor of Eating Disorders Awareness Month and is the project of one of our youth ambassadors, Cheyenne Vallette. Everything related to the Pinwheel series, including a recording of today's session, can be found at keltymentalhealth.ca/pinwheel. We appreciate your feedback. If you can, please fill out our feedback form. And if you registered for the event online, you'll receive an email after today's event with a link to a feedback survey. Please fill it out, as this helps us plan and improve the Pinwheel series. We also have some paper copies in the room. For those of you who are joining us for the first time, the Kelty Mental Health Resource Center is a provincial mental health and substance use information and resource center serving BC children, youth, and families. We also offer peer support to families and youth, as well as to people of all ages struggling with eating disorders. Please go to our website, www.keltymentalhealth.ca, for more information, resources, and for our contact information. For those of you joining us via telehealth, if you have problems with your telehealth during the session, please call your local telehealth support or PHSA telehealth support at 604-875-2000. Extension 6492. And telehealth, can you hear us? Can you wave if you can hear us? Thank you. Awesome. Before we begin, I want to ask everyone on the phone to please mute their phones, either directly or by pressing star 6. This will minimize any background noise and make the listening experience more enjoyable for everyone. Thank you. So hello again, everyone. Welcome to the first ever youth-led Pinwheel, where we'll be hearing from youth on the topic of eating disorders and relapse. This is a project that's being done through the Youth Ambassador Program that we run here through the Kelty Mental Health Resource Center. It's a program for BC youth ages 17 to 24 who are interested in advocating for mental health in their personal lives, schools, and communities. The youth who has organized this project as part of her commitments to the Youth Ambassador Program is named Cheyenne Vallette, and she's here with us today along with Andrea Vukobrat, who is the Youth Ambassador Program Coordinator and a Family Smart Youth in Residence. Today's Pinwheel session is in a bit of a different format than our typical Pinwheel. Instead of going person by person on a panel, I'll be interviewing Cheyenne and Andrea, and then we'll have a question and answer period at the end. So before we dive in, could each of you talk briefly about your roles and why you're here today?
Yeah, as you mentioned, I'm the Family Smart Youth in Residence with the Institute of Families, and I work out of the Kelty Center as a youth peer support worker, and I also do project coordination for a lot of our youth programs and projects. And one of those is the Youth Ambassador Program. And so with our Youth Ambassador Program, we have our ambassadors, and then we have mentors who are ambassadors who have returned from past years and provide guidance and support to the new ambassadors. So Cheyenne is one of those mentors.
So as Andrea said, I'm one of the mentors for the Kelty Youth Ambassador Program. I got involved in this program through my own struggle with mental health and wanting to be able to make a positive impact and to support others who are going through their own mental health struggles at the moment as well.
Wonderful, thank you. And Cheyenne, could you tell us a bit more about why you picked this specific topic to be your project?
I decided to focus on the relapse aspect of eating disorders because I find that once you go into treatment for an eating disorder, there's an idea that once you come out, you're supposed to be recovered and that's it. You're not supposed to go back to your eating disorder at all. It's over with. And unfortunately, that's not the reality for many people struggling with eating disorders. Relapse happens to be part of the process to get to recovery.
And would you both mind telling us a bit about your eating disorders journey?
Yeah, so for me it started quite young. I'd say around 12, 13, I really started using food to cope with my emotions, and I found a lot of comfort in it. And then as I got older, I began feeling ashamed because often it wasn't, you know, regular eating of food, it was binging, and eventually I turned to purging as well. And I just thought it meant, you know, there was something wrong with me, and I never really accepted it for what it was, which was a coping tool for my anxiety. And I remember I told my parents had no idea what it was. So they took me to our doctor, who was going to put in a referral to St. Paul's Eating Disorders Program, and I wound up being like, no, it's fine, I can take care of it myself, but it just got worse and worse over time, and it intensified over time, until eventually I wound up getting CBT through the university that I was at. And with CBT, I had an amazing counselor who helped me see that bulimia for me was a coping tool, and it wasn't something to be ashamed of. It just meant that the coping tools I currently had for stress and anxiety and stuff like that were not meeting the level that I needed. So she helped me figure out different ways to cope with my anxiety, and also helped me work on self-acceptance and accepting that didn't mean there was anything wrong with me.
So throughout my life, I've always had problems with my body image and wanting to not feel so-called negative emotions and only wanting to feel the positive ones. And throughout that, I seem to have turned to food to help me cope with that. Transitioning into high school as well was difficult, as I had just had a fallout with one of my best friends at that time, and also with perfectionism. On top of that, it was just somehow turned into an eating disorder. And so in grade 9, I started restricting. And then come grade 10, it happened that my friends started to notice, and they made me start to get help through a school counselor. At that point, my parents didn't know what I was dealing with. And once they found out, they were supportive and they got me to the doctors right away. And I got a referral to outpatient, and then from there, unfortunately, I needed more help than just outpatient. So after a few years of them trying to agree for me to go to inpatient, I finally decided to go. And so I spent about 2.5 months in Children's Hospital in their eating disorders inpatient unit. And then from there, I went to residential treatment, and now I'm where I am today.
Great. Thanks for sharing that. And what did relapse look like for you?
For me, it was very subtle. I didn't really realize what was happening until I was in the thick of it. And then it was something at the time that I didn't want to let go. So I was 22 years old. I was nearing the end of my undergrad degree. I was very stressed out. I had a bout of health anxiety, which meant that I was always worried that something was going to go wrong with my health. And so I turned to my old coping tools and my old ways of comforting myself. And it really felt like a failure. I felt like I'd gone backwards. And that just made me secretive and closed off. And eating disorders thrive on secrecy. So the more I did it, the more secretive I became, the more I closed myself off from those around me and closed myself off to any kind of help that I could have had from them.
When I left inpatient, it was right before graduation, and so from the stress from that, I happened to relapse almost instantly. With grad coming up, I wasn't sure if I was going to graduate on time, as I spent a portion of my grad year in treatment, not being able to go to school, and with the strike that was going on at the time, I wasn't sure if I was even going to be able to return back to school after. So that, and then also like grad dinner dance and everything coming up, that was very stressful for me. So I went back to how I knew how to cope, and that was using restriction as a coping mechanism.
How did you overcome your period of relapse? Who did you talk to?
So when I had relapsed, I didn't even realize that I had relapsed, even though people were telling me that that's what was happening. I just kept blowing it off, and I was like, no, I didn't. That's impossible. I'm fine. And it didn't really occur to me until I was in Woodstone that I had relapsed.
Andrea?
I guess it was breaking that secrecy, deciding to break that secrecy. The first person I told actually was my sister, because she's always been my number one supporter, and I told her, and her reaction was what it always was whenever I came to her with a problem. She was very accepting, and it was nothing but love, and she kind of gave me permission to love and accept myself. when I wasn't very proud of where I was or what was going on for me. And then I told my boyfriend, and I think just the more people I told, the more I opened myself up to help. And the more I realized that this was not healthy, because it's one thing to lie to yourself and say, oh, this is the last time I'm doing it, or oh, it's just this once because I'm really stressed. But it's another thing to lie to people who love and care about you. So it became harder and harder to maintain that as a coping tool, and then that pushed me to get help.
And through that, like through that journey, having relapse and overcoming, what did it look like to process and accept that you had relapse?
Overcoming my relapse was incredibly difficult for me. At the time, as I said, I didn't think that I had relapsed. So going into treatment for me was something that I didn't really want to do. And so processing through that took a long time for me to do, but I had my motivations to recover, so I just kept bringing those up and being like, this is why I need to recover. And of course, I finally did accept that I relapsed after a long time of talking to people about it, but processing it and accepting that I relapsed was definitely a very difficult thing.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't easy, and I think that was the point, like, because my sister convinced me to tell my dad, and he offered to pay for me to see a psychologist, and so I started seeing one, and her perspective on it helped me shift my perspective, because from my perspective it was, I failed, and from her perspective it was, there's a lot of stress and you're turning to old coping tools, and so she really helped me see it as that versus, you know, something being wrong with me or some kind of moral failing on my part.
You both talked a bit about your families and how they're involved in your recovery process from relapse. So what would you say to parents who suspect that their child with an eating disorder may be experiencing a relapse? How can they best support them?
It's important as a parent to support your child a lot at this time, supporting them through meals, supporting them after meal times. If they're not attending therapy, making sure that they are getting the help they need, if that includes putting them back in therapy so that they have the professional aspect, making sure that they're going to doctor's appointments to ensure that as their mental health isn't as well as it used to be, that their physical health isn't declining at the same time. And it's also important to not blame yourself for the relapse. It's not your fault at all. And to take care of yourself at this time as well, because it's important to make sure your mental health isn't suffering at the same time.
Yeah, definitely agree with that. And I think just the fact that oftentimes relapse will follow a period of intense stress, coming to your child and talking about it from the perspective of, I notice that you're stressed out, or I notice there's a lot going on with you. And even if you notice that there is a period of intense stress, maybe having a preemptive chat, like, you know, there's a lot going on, how are you feeling, and just checking in with your kids. And I know it's really scary, because eating disorders are scary. And at the same time, you know, not reacting over the top, and just giving your kids space to talk to you about these things.
That's great. And as people that have lived experience with this subject, what would you say to youth who are worried about a relapse or feel they may be experiencing one right now?
If you think that you're experiencing a relapse, it is important to be able to speak to someone about it. Go to someone you trust, whether that be a friend, a teacher, a parent, anyone that you're able to, because eating disorders thrive on secrecy. So the longer that you are keeping it a secret and not telling people about it, you're giving it that much more time to grow and to get stronger and not being able to receive the supports that you do need. And it's important to also take care of yourself during this time as well, whether that means going back and looking at all of your old notes you've taken from therapy sessions and re-going all of the, like, your CBT and DBT. And it's also important to remember that recovery is possible and that you do deserve it.
I'm glad you brought up the notes thing, because I keep these three pages from my counselor, the first person I saw, where she explained CBT and how it talks to the whole, like, thoughts and feelings affecting your behaviors. And I keep those on hand, and I think really just thinking about it from the perspective of relapse may happen. Not, you know, leaving treatment and being like, I'm better and I'm better forever. Because, you know, with mental health, it's not just about the destination and you get there and you're like, I am mentally well for the rest of my life. It's about a journey and about really taking care of yourself. So even having a plan in place, like, oh, if I notice I'm having certain thoughts or I'm having certain feelings, any guilt about food, any urges to binge, figuring out who your safe person is and who to talk to when that does happen, and figuring out what the plan is if you do have a relapse.
Oh, that's both really good insights there. Thank you. And our last question is, do you feel like relapse is talked about enough when it comes to eating disorders recovery?
I feel like relapse isn't really talked about enough. As I said before, people have this idea that you go into treatment and you leave recovered. And with that in mind, people don't really expect a relapse to happen. They're sitting there thinking, okay, they're fine, nothing's going to happen, they're eating disorders in the past. And then relapses come as an even more surprise than they would have if it than it would have if it was talked about. So it's important that people do bring up relapse throughout your treatment processes.
Yeah, and if nobody does bring it up yourself. I mean, don't be afraid to say, I'm worried that when I leave here, it's going to be a different environment than what I'm used to, and I think it'll be stressful. Or I think just everybody opening up and talking about it, even if as a parent you're concerned, it's okay to talk about it. You're not going to put ideas in your child's head if you start asking them questions, if you're noticing stuff. I feel like the more we talk about it, the less likely it is that people will see relapse as, like I said, this moral failing or that there is something wrong with you. I think we need to naturalize it as part of the recovery process.
Well, thank you both so much for sharing your stories and your journeys through eating disorders. I think that'll be valuable for a lot of people to hear. And now we've got quite a lot of time, actually, to open it up to some questions from the audience. So first I wanted to ask if anyone from telehealth had any questions. Feel free to unmute yourselves and ask a question if you'd like to do so now. No? Okay. Thank you. And now we'll go to the phones. If anyone from the phone has a question, you're welcome to ask now.
So my experience with eating disorders is quite limited. And in areas of the province where there isn't as much support, like up north, I had friends who attended Narcotics Anonymous to try and deal with like the coping aspect of choosing, you know, like their behaviors and that kind of a thing. What would you guys recommend for someone who isn't near, you know, access to counselors or isn't sort of close by a group that actually focuses on eating disorders?
For me, I would definitely recommend, there's an online chat through the Looking Glass Foundation. And I believe it's on Tuesdays and Thursdays in the evening, and it's free, and it's super quick to join in, and it's moderated by professionals, and so it's a very safe space to talk about struggles with eating disorders. And then also contacting the Kelty Center, because there might be things around that aren't necessarily widely known about. And also we are provincial, so we do offer peer support. If you do know of a youth that wanted to speak with someone about their eating disorder, I'm more than happy to speak with them, or we do have parent peer support workers who are happy to speak with parents as well on the topic of eating disorders.
Thank you.
Also, I know that sometimes if you ask a therapist to do a Skype session or something with you, if you don't have access to therapy services over there, sometimes some of them are willing to do Skype like sessions instead of person, like in person.
Cool. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Anyone else on the phone?
Can we refer adults to Kelty Resource Center?
We do eating disorders across the lifespan, and then we do youth up to 25. So eating disorders related, absolutely, yes.
Okay, cool.
Last call for the phones before we go to the room.
was just wondering, aside from the obvious, which would be not eating, what are some of the signs and symptoms that somebody might be suffering from an eating disorder?
I think it's if you're noticing a lot of secrecy, a lot of changes in behavior, like if somebody's very irritable or if they're suddenly very withdrawn. And often you'll see, if it is a restricting type eating disorder, you'll see people getting pretty cranky and having trouble focusing. Also, if it's restricting, you'll notice them being constantly cold. For girls, they usually lose their period. But then with anything, I mean, with eating disorders or any kind of mental health challenge, you'll notice people withdrawing into themselves, I think, a lot of the time, and you'll notice behaviors that are concerning. And I guess, Cheyenne, if you wanted to speak to some of the symptoms.
Okay. Yeah. I knew with me, I isolated a lot. Or I would go out for long periods of time so that I didn't have to deal with at home, and so I could almost lie about my intake and stuff. So I guess just being cautious of their behaviors, seeing what they're doing, if they're going out more than usual or staying in their room more, if their moods changed, if they're more anxious and irritable. And I feel like I had something else to say. Just watching them, and even just having an open conversation with them about it as well, right? Like, I know with me, when I started going through an eating disorder, I didn't know what eating disorders were. I had no clue that they even existed. So even having that conversation with, hey, this is something that exists, and just talking about it, they might be like, oh, I'm having a few of these things going on in my life right now. So I guess just looking out for the other person too.
Yeah.
Anybody else on the phone?
Are you guys seeing more of an incline in males needing your resources lately? I mean, in the past few years, are you seeing that men or boys are becoming more and more involved with having eating disorders?
I'm not sure if I would say it's an incline or an increase, but I would say that it's being talked about more, for sure. And we definitely have had parents getting in touch with us where their son is experiencing an eating disorder that might not look like the average eating disorder. Mm-hmm. For example, they're really, really obsessed with getting bigger, like they want to build bigger muscles. So it's still a similar principle of that fixation on one thing to the detriment of others. So I can't say for sure that there is an incline, but I definitely think it's being talked about and recognized more, because I think in the past people thought it was just mm-hmm. something that happened to girls and women.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
I have a question. The primary population that I find myself working with eating disorders, the teenagers aren't necessarily actively wanting to change. They're pretty entrenched in their disorder. Mm-hmm. And I'm just curious, what shifted you from kind of a pre-contemplative stance to more of a contemplative and action stage?
With me, I'm not even 100% sure what happened. I remember waking up in treatment on my 18th birthday and being like, this is my reality, this is what's happening in my life. Like, I'm in treatment and I can't do anything on my birthday. I'm stuck here. And for me, I had that realization that if I don't get better, this will be my reality forever. If I don't get better, I'll be waking up on treatment every year on my birthday. And, or even worse, I might not even wake up on my next birthday, right? So, and then just focusing on what I want to do with my future, being like, I want to be an eating disorders therapist. And I can't do that if I don't recover. I want to be able to help people through their eating disorders. And I'd seem like a hypocrite if I was still actively dealing with my own eating disorder. And being like, no, recovery is great, do it, right? So I guess just focusing on my future really helped me.
Yeah, and I think too, when the topic of eating disorders is brought up, if it's with someone who's struggling with it, a lot of the time you say like, oh, I think, you know, you have this challenge and I think you need to see a counselor or whatever, and they don't hear, you know, we want to get you support. They hear, we want to take away your one coping tool. And so I think coming at it from a perspective of, let's just get curious and figure out what is going on for you that this is what you're turning to. And let's talk about, you know, let's talk about the things that you like about your eating disorder. I know that sounds weird, but that really helped me, because the counselor was like, well, what does it feel like after? And I remember talking to her about how after I would purge, it felt so relaxing. And she's like, and then what does it feel like in the long term? And I started realizing that even though in the short term it did feel better, in the long term it was just adding to the shame and the guilt, and it was damaging my health and my mental health as well. And so I think when you get curious, as opposed to being like, let's get rid of the eating disorder, you kind of give them space to get curious about it themselves.
It also almost feels like when someone's like trying to help someone with an eating disorder, that they're trying to take all of the control from that person away and trying to control the person with the eating disorder, which also can be incredibly scary, because for me, I know my eating disorder was a lot about control and me having control over my life, even though with my eating disorder, I didn't really have control because it was just that. But whenever someone would try to help me through it, I always felt like, you're trying to just control me, you're trying to do this or that to me, right? So just remembering to make sure that they know that you're not trying to take all of the control away. You're trying to give them the control back that they don't have.
Yeah.
Anyone else on the phone? Okay, let's go to the room. Does anyone in the room have any questions for Cheyenne or Andrea?
Can I ask you what kind of eating disorder you have?
I had anorexia purge type.
And I had bulimia.
Different types.
Yeah.
Can you tell me the difference in different symptoms?
Yeah, for bulimia, it's binging and purging. So a lot of the time, someone who is struggling with bulimia will eat a lot of food at once and then purge it in different ways. The symptoms range, but a lot of the time you'll see people becoming irritable. For physical symptoms, you might notice that they aren't looking so good. They might leave after every meal. You might notice, like, if it's your child, you might notice a lot of like wrappers under the bed or things like that, a lot of secret eating. Cheyenne, for you?
With me, I would restrict my intake, so I would be skipping meals, and then most of the time when I ate, I'd still want to get rid of it because I'd have an immense amount of guilt about eating. So I would turn to purging as a way to not feel as guilty for eating. And with me, I was very irritable. I would get, without noticing, I would get angry about the slightest thing. When I was in the kitchen, no one else was allowed in there with me, or like I would get angry at them. I took a lot of control over everything in the kitchen, which, looking back, I didn't even realize I was doing that until it was pointed out to me. And then just withdrawing, I didn't want to be around friends because I didn't want them to help me at all, and just, yeah.
Another question.
Maybe we'll go to someone else first and come back to you out of time.
Okay.
Lisa?
You said you didn't realize that you had relapsed, so but other people were telling you that you had relapsed. Can you talk about that? Like, how did you decide, yes, I have relapsed? Or, I mean, I just find it odd that you don't know that you're in that state. Is it denial?
I think I was denying that I had relapsed. I didn't want to admit it to myself because I knew if I admitted it, I knew that that's what had happened. I had friends telling me that you've relapsed, like you don't look as good as you used to be. And I remember you would use the set point weight and be like, no, it's okay. It's just like my body like figuring itself out from being in treatment. And looking back, that wasn't the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to the Looking Glass summer camp, and even there I was still in denial about my relapse. Even though I would sit there and I wouldn't do anything, I would just sit there and get angry and be sad about everything. And I didn't even realize that at the time, that I had been struggling that much with my eating disorder. And then it took going into treatment again and me calling home every night, yelling at my parents, saying, please come pick me up. I'm not sick. I don't need to be here. Mm-hmm. And then finally, after all of the staff was like, no, you've relapsed. You do need to be here. We're not going to discharge you as much as you're begging us to and yelling at us to. That had made me be like, oh, maybe I have actually relapsed. Maybe this is happening. So it's more of just an acceptance mm-hmm. problem for me.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So a question over there.
Yeah, I realize I came in a little bit late, but I recognize that neither of you have really spoken to kind of the image part a lot of people do have to their eating disorder mm-hmm. and how it kind of has a recovery process in and of itself. And I just wondered if either of you, from your own experience, either had that piece and could speak to it.
So the piece around body image, or?
Yeah.
Definitely, I had that piece. I've always been really tall, and growing up, I always had this urge to, and it was my anxiety too that pushed me. I wanted to be smaller than I was, and so. I think going through puberty, it was suddenly like, oh my God, it's so many changes, like, I don't know what's happening. And I come from a culture where people are really blunt. And so people would make comments on my body, and then you start to internalize that. And I still, to this day, you know, I struggle, I think, with body image and self-acceptance. But I've learned that first voice that speaks in my head when I see my reflection that has a negative comment, that's the eating disorder, or that's my anxiety, and then the voice that I follow that up with, that's me. So if that first urge is, you look terrible today, or oh my God, like how can you wear those pants? The second voice is like, I can wear whatever I want to wear, and I think that I look great, and I'm like so grateful for this body. And it sounds kind of corny, but I think just like following up those negative thoughts with self-affirmations is really important.
For me, growing up, I always had body image issues. I never liked the way I looked. And going through treatment, I used the fake it till you make it motto. I would look in the mirror and I'd be like, I like this part of myself today. And even though that was a complete lie at the time, just saying it and looking in the mirror and repeating it to myself, one day it just started to be true. I could be like, I like my legs today. And then eventually it just so happened that I did start to like my legs. And now, every now and then I look in the mirror and I'm like, oh, I don't like this part or I don't like that part about myself. And then I always follow it up with, well, like, at least I'm healthy, at least, like, I'm alive, right? Like, I might not like this part of myself right now, but I'm so much further than I used to be.
And I don't know if you noticed, but in the hallway we have a mirror set up, and that's another Youth Ambassador project. She's going to be here today to facilitate it because she's at school, but it's called like Mirror Mirror, and basically it's having a mirror up and asking people to put post-its around it of things about themselves that they like, and just surrounding the mirror with positivity, because I think especially in our culture, like here, the mirror is very much used as like a center for critique, you know, like even in the movie Mean Girls, they're all standing in front of the mirror and cutting themselves down. Like it's so normal now to criticize yourself. And I think just making a conscientious effort every time you look in a mirror, have something positive in your mind, whether it's, you know, I'm so glad that I'm able to be at work today or whatever it is, but just some positive comments that you start associating your reflection with positivity.
You had a second question?
Yeah, I'm not sure whether or not I should ask you. I mean, you guys have a different types of eating disorder, mm-hmm. so have a different treatment. Is that correct?
I think it depends on the person and it depends how severe it is. But Cheyenne went to inpatient, whereas I did counseling for anxiety. Like I didn't even. It wasn't even specifically for the eating disorder that I sought counseling, but treating the anxiety helped me learn different coping tools so that I didn't have to use bulimia as a way to cope with my anxiety.
And in a lot of like treatment centers, they almost personalize the program for the person that they're dealing with. So you can be in the same program as someone and have a completely different recovery process as them. Like you could have therapy like four times a week where one person only has it one time a week because that's what you need at the time. So no matter, like, you can have the exact same diagnosis as someone and have your treatment process be entirely different.
I find it interesting just how much the conversation focuses on I feel guilty, or you know, I felt good about myself for doing this, like mm-hmm. proud or guilt, and you can feel, you know, the same person feels proud of themselves if they restrict, and then they feel proud of themselves once they recover, and then they feel guilty when they relapse, and it's all very wrapped up in judgment.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering where that measurement of judgment comes from, and if you think there's, I mean, if part of the process is to kind of reject societal norms that say you should look this way, you should look that way, or you should be able to control this or that, and if there's any kind of, I don't know, anger on your part about the images that we're facing, that we're all bombarded with.
There's a lot of anger, actually. Well, there used to be, especially because I remember sitting in a doctor's office and flipping through, it was like a teen beat, and it was just like one body type represented, and in that moment I felt a lot of anger, and this is as somebody who's 20 years old, I was sitting there and being like, you know what, like this does things to me to see all these pictures. I can't imagine what it does to someone who's 12 or 13.
Mm-hmm.
And I think taking that anger and turning it into really looking at why that's used and looking at how that can be combated.
Mm-hmm.
And I have like, I have people in my life, like not just younger women, but also like younger men and youth that I work with, where I really, I want to talk about it openly and talk about like, how do these images make you feel? And like I said, getting curious. So that anger has been replaced by curiosity with like, why is it that we need to make kids and youth feel like they are not enough unless they look a certain way?
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I love all the work that that Amy's been doing with provincial eating disorders awareness, and all the campaigns that are happening, and all the body positivity, all the actresses and actors speaking out about body image and stuff like that. Like, I think mm-hmm. that's really changing the landscape.
I definitely felt anger towards it, but as I learned more about it, like that's not who they are. There's a lot of Photoshop put into them. Like someone can look one size and not even be that size at all in a magazine, right? It's society saying that this is what you should look like when those people don't even look like that at all.
Nobody looks like that.
Exactly. So once I realized that, it was a lot of, like, so these people don't even look like that, but so many other people are trying to achieve that, like, body type
mm-hmm.
when it's completely unrealistic to be able to achieve that. So once I realized that, it was a lot less anger put to it, and, like, I still have some anger towards it.
Mm-hmm.
I'll look in a magazine and I'm like, everything's the same. But I've realized that now they're also incorporating different body sizes in magazines and on television and everywhere, so that I feel will hopefully have some sort of positive impact on a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I feel like with social media too, it's, I mean, you can sit and scroll through your Instagram for hours and just see more and more pictures of people who are presenting a certain image of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you can download photoshopping apps onto your phone, take a picture of yourself, photoshop yourself, and upload it to Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's pretty intense in terms of the image that people can present. But then at the same time, you can also go on Instagram and follow a bunch of body positive people, and like every person that I follow is geared towards body positivity and is very much geared towards being open about your mental health and well-being. I mean, I wrote a blog post about this on the Kelty website not too long ago where, I just noticed that for women it's almost, and probably for some men too, it's almost like second nature to apologize for indulging, like, oh, I shouldn't be having this donut, or like, oh man, I shouldn't eat this cookie, but I'll go for a run later. And it's so normalized, and I talked to my friends about it, and my friend was like, oh yeah, I do that too, I didn't even realize I did that. And that's the scary part, where it's like second nature. So I really think drawing attention to it and drawing attention to, like, it's okay to, like, have a cookie and, like, it's okay to not look like the Photoshop person. And I think Dove's doing some really great work around that. They've had a few videos where they show someone getting Photoshopped and just the stuff they do to her, like the elongator neck and, like, it's just, I'm like, yeah, nobody looks like that.
Any other questions? Okay. Well, thanks so much, everyone. I want to thank our speakers again for sharing their insights from their journeys. It's a sensitive topic and you both spoke so eloquently about it. I really appreciate that. And I also want to thank everyone that came in person, on the phone, and telehealth for joining us. And our next pinwheel is coming up on March 21st, and it's going to be on youth and the opioid crisis. So it's already on our website. Feel free to check it out. Thanks for joining us. Have a great afternoon. Bye.